The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter number 29, Text number 33, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on March 14th, 2010, in Vrindavan, India.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter number 29, Text number 33. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yatha hi purusho bharam shirasa gurum udvahan tangskadhena saadate tata sarva pratikriya yatha hi purusho bharam Shirasa gurum udvaham skankadhena saadhate tata sarva pratikriya. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. A man may carry a burden on his head, and when he feels it to be too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulder. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another. This is a good description of an attempt to transfer a burden from one place to another. When one gets tired of keeping a burden on his head, he will place it on his shoulder. This does not mean that he's become freed from the strains of carrying the burden. Similarly, human society in the name of civilization is creating one kind of trouble to avoid another kind of trouble. In contemporary civilization, we see that there are so many automobiles manufactured to carry us swiftly from one place to another. At the same time, we have created so many other problems. We have to construct so many roads, and yet these roads are insufficient to cope with automobile congestion and traffic jams. There are also the problems of air pollution and fuel shortage. The conclusion is that the processes we manufacture to counteract or minimize our distresses do not actually put an end to our pains. It is all simply illusion. We simply place the burden from the head to the shoulder. The only real way we can minimize our problems is to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and give ourselves up to His protection. The Lord, being all-powerful, can make arrangements to mitigate our painful life in material existence.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatam Vita Buddham Sajiva. Sadaita Savaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha.
So, one may be out on Govardhan Parikrama, carrying some bag with, you know, prasadam or something in it. On the shoulder, just, after a while, just so much burden. Let me put it on this shoulder to get some relief. But are you actually relieved? No, you're still carrying, stuck with that burden. You see. It may appear that you believe yourself with a burden, but actually the burden is still there. You see. You're still stuck in carrying the burden. So, Prabhupada's giving a very nice example here on how the material society, you see. In order to solve the problem of transportation, they invent the automobile, they make so many roads, they go through the whole trouble of getting the petroleum out of the earth, turning it into gasoline. It's just so many problems they go through. The air pollution, the traffic accidents, the horrible traffic jams, the pollution. You know, the horrible effect it has on your lungs, having to breathe all that polluted air, all for the purpose of getting from point A to point B a little faster than it could on a horse, you know. And we're thinking how we advanced in civilization. Previously, in Delhi, the air was very clean and beautiful. Wonderful clean air everywhere, you see. Back in the days when they had horses, you know, horse and buggy carriages, you know. And we're thinking, oh, now we're advanced. We're not living the barbaric days then when they didn't have internet, you know. Now it's so much better now, you see. But actually, the air is so polluted, people are dying just from lung diseases, just from breathing the air, you know. So what have we really done? You know, to speed up our transportation, not to have to worry about the horse manure, you know. Thinning up horse manure. We thought we solved the problem of the horse manure by inventing the horseless carriage, you see. So in this way, the material life, whatever we try to solve the problems of material existence, but whenever we do that, we simply create another problem. That's all we're doing. One problem, another problem, you see. Just like some of you may have an experience, I don't know if in India, but in America, wall-to-wall carpets are very popular. You get a carpet that goes up, the whole room is the carpet, called wall-to-wall carpeting. And sometimes after they put the carpet in, there's some problem in the carpet, there's a little bubble in the carpet. It wasn't properly installed, and you have a bubble in the carpet. So you think, let's get rid of this bubble. You push down on it to get rid of it, then it comes up somewhere else, you see. Isn't it? You had that experience with a bubble in the carpet. You can't ever get rid of it. Even if you push it down, it comes up somewhere else. So, that's what it's like in this material world, you know. Whatever material attempt you make to solve the problem, you simply create another problem. And to try to solve that problem, you create another one. And to solve that problem, you create another one. It just goes on and on and on in ad infinitum. You can't ever get rid of it. But there's one way out, there's one solution, and that's to get a solution from beyond this material existence. See? The actual problem is we are in this material existence. That's the problem. It's like you may be in a prison, you're thinking, oh, I'm very uncomfortable in this prison. Let me get in good with the warden so I can get a better facility within the prison. I get a nicer cell. Maybe get a little TV set in my prison cell, you see. because I make good friends with the warden. But you're still a prisoner. What good is it to try to get a better position within the prison? The intelligent person, what am I doing in this prison? Let me get out of here. Let me go to that place where I'm no longer a prisoner, you see. You see, this is intelligence. So, Krishna is giving us the solution for all our problems. Get out of this material existence. I will liberate you from this place. All you have to do is try to love me. You may say, but that's artificial. I mean, I'm an agnostic. I don't really even believe in God. This is thing so weird and artificial for me. I can't get into this. But let's look at the whole thing philosophically. You know, let's just analyze our existence from a philosophical viewpoint. Okay, the first thing is we can understand I exist. I exist. That's self-evident. I can analyze philosophically that I exist. Okay. And I can also see there are other persons that exist around me. There's many, many persons. And there's also this huge existence of which we are all a part. I can see that just by philosophical analysis. There's a huge existence. And within that we can't even measure it. You know, the scientists say they're measuring the scope of it, but I don't know if they've really done that or not yet. Because they always think they have it, and then they realize later on that they didn't really understand things. And then a new discovery comes. So anyway, there's this vast, inconceivable existence of which we are a part. I'm a part of it, you're a part of it, we're all a part of this vast, inconceivable existence. That we can understand philosophically. So, where did it come from? How did it get here? One could ask these questions. So, some people say, well, it just came out of nothing. You know, it just happened out of nothing. Is that possible that something can come out of nothing? You may say it's possible, but is it probable? I mean, anything's possible, but is it something that can be scientifically verifiable? That we can get something out of nothing? It's never been demonstrated in one laboratory experiment. That you can get something out of nothing. It has never been demonstrated in any laboratory experiment. So if we want to even approach it from the standpoint of mundane material science, it's not scientific to say that this existence came out of nothing. We have experience through empirical observation of science, the scientific method, that any time you have something, it came from something else. Every time. Everything we've experienced, it comes from something which came from something which came from something. So the origin of existence within, logically, philosophically, the origin of existence would be that something which doesn't come from something. That's the logical origin of existence. All right, so now we can philosophically, scientifically understand the origin of existence. That's something from which everything else has come that doesn't have something that it came from. That's the origin of existence. So then what is the nature of that origin? That's the next question. Well, the example I always give in this connection is a gold mine. If every day I bring you 1 kilo of gold, I think a kilo is going for about $1,000 now or something now. I mean, a gram is $1,000. Isn't it $1,000 for a gram of gold? Or an ounce of gold, yeah, that's right. Anyway, a kilogram is it's very valuable. If every day I brought you 1 kilogram, 1,000 grams of pure gold, you'd become a wealthy person very quickly. So every day I bring you 1 kilogram of pure gold, and finally one day you say, well, Gurudev, where are you getting all this gold from? I mean, this is just amazing. You bring me all this gold every day. Where are you getting all this gold from? Well, I have a gold mine. Really? How much gold do you have in that gold mine? There's no gold in that gold mine. Oh, wait a minute. You're hiding something. There has to be gold in that gold mine. Otherwise, how are you getting all the gold out of the gold mine? You understand? So there is that origin of existence is like the mine from which everything else is being mined, you understand? Extracted. All these persons we see here in this existence, and even all the impersonal energy we see in this existence, it is all extracted or mined from that original source of existence, the mine of existence. You see. So, in order to get gold out of a gold mine, you have to have gold in the gold mine. You can't have a goldless gold mine and expect to get gold out of it. Similarly, you can, since we see that so many persons are coming out of the source of existence, it's not possible to have an impersonal source of existence. You can't get persons out of imperson. You understand? You can't get gold out of a goldless gold mine. You can't get persons out of an impersonal source of existence. Therefore, the source of existence must possess personality. It must possess personality. Now, I can ask any one of you, you're all persons. Do you like people to refer to you as it? How's it doing today? Is it having a good day today? Its T-lock is nice looking. Its T-lock is, where is its T-lock? Would you like to be called it? No, nobody wants to be called it. So, should we refer to that source of existence, which philosophically you can think of as it, but when you really get down to it, can we really call it it? Can you continue to call it, keep calling it, and expect to be on good terms with it? No, not possible. You need to... If it's a person, you better start calling it him. Or some people say, well, it's her, you know. Whether it's him or her, actually we say it's she, he, Radha Krishna. There's the feminine and masculine aspects both for the Supreme. So we're not worried about whether God is he or she. We just call God she, he. Radha Krishna, Lakshmi, Narayan, Sita Ram, we have no problem. She, he is not an issue for us, whether God is he or she. We see the feminine aspects and masculine aspects of the Supreme. So anyway, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all existence, you see. All right, then the next question is, well, who is he? If we understand there's a person out there who's the source of all existence, all right, then who is he? What's his name? You see. Of course, in Judeo-Christian tradition, they just call him God. You know, they name his position. But they don't really know his name. It's like saying, well, the prime minister or the president. Well, who is he? What's his name? Well, I don't know. I just know we have one here in Australia, or we have one here in the U.S., or we have one here in India. We have a prime minister. I don't know his name, but we have one. He's just the prime minister. Well, that's good. You know you have a prime minister. But the person who actually knows the name of the prime minister, they're more advanced in knowledge, you see. So, to know that there's a supreme person is the source of all existence. That's very good. Now, but those who know the name of that person, They have a closer relationship. So, let us find out who is that person. Of course, Mahavishnu is one aspect. He's sleeping in Yoga Nidra. But we're interested in the original aspect that's always awake. So, that original aspect, that original form of God, you see. How will we discern who it is? How will we find out? The Shivites say, that's Lord Shiva. The Durgavasis say, oh, that's Durga Devi. So how will we actually ascertain who is that Supreme Person? Well, the great, you may have heard of the great sage Parashara Muni. Actually, he's the father of Vyasadeva, the compiler of the Vedic wisdom. The great sage Parashara Muni, he came up with a test by which it can be determined who is the Supreme Person. It's a very nice test, a very suitable test. He said, that person who possesses such a great quantity of power, six things, power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. Who possesses these six opulences in a greater quantity than anyone else, that person is the Supreme Person. It's a very good test because these six qualities are what are attractive for us. You see, if somebody's very powerful, that's attractive. Just like sometimes there's some big retired military man. I don't know who he is, but he comes to the restaurant sometimes here. And he comes with, you know, about 20 bodyguards. It's amazing when he comes. All the bodyguards are here. They're rifles. He's some big... Is he active in the military? I don't know if he's still, but he... Anyway, he has to look out for the gundas. He must have put down a lot of gundas during his career. And so he's surrounded by bodyguards. A whole entourage of vehicles pulls up. So when he comes to take lunch at MBT, then you know it's interesting to see. Oh, there he is. You know, he has his turban. I think he's a Sikh guy. But he has his whole entourage of bodyguards, and it's really, you know, it's some powerful person like that. Or if the prime minister came, or a president came, a powerful person, everybody's attracted. Oh, look, there's a very powerful person. Or somebody very beautiful, just like a very beautiful young girl, you see. Beautiful girl in an opulent sari with bangles and just beautifully decorated for a wedding or something, you know. Everybody wants to see, oh, there's a beautiful young girl, you see. So if somebody's very powerful, somebody's very beautiful, somebody's very renounced, very, very austere and renounced person, that's also attractive, you see. Someone's very knowledgeable, just like Einstein, you see. Everybody would like to meet Dr. Einstein. He's very famous for being a very knowledgeable person. Knowledge. Someone's very wealthy, like Bill Gates, you see. Or someone's very famous, like, you know, the Beatles. If the Beatles came, George Harrison, he sometimes came here. He'd come to the Prabhupada, he would chant japa in the samadhi, Prabhupada samadhi. And he'd say, oh, Prabhupada is here. So if George Harrison was here today, of course now he's departed, but if George was here, anybody would like to see, there's George Harrison of the Beatles, right there walking, going at the MVT restaurant. Well, let's see if we can, maybe say Hare Krishna to George, you know, George Harrison is here. Wow. Prabhupada loved him so much, and George Harrison is here today at the MVT restaurant. So in this way, if somebody's powerful, beautiful, renounced, knowledgeable, wealthy, or famous, you see. Then we're very attracted to them. So just imagine that person who has more power, more beauty, more renunciation, more knowledge, more wealth, and more fame than anybody else throughout the entire existence. Parashara Muni said, that's the Supreme Person. And if you think about it, it's a very logical thing because that person who's the source of all existence, it's from him who... that all the power comes. It's from him that all renunciation comes. It's from him that all beauty comes. It's from him that all knowledge, wealth, and fame are coming. So if they're all coming from him, then he must possess them in full. Isn't it? This is logical. So all we then we have to do is, okay, get it, have a contest, you see. And we'll have put them into a big supercomputer or something, you know. Come up with all the names of everyone we can think of, all the contestants for being God, you know. And see who's more powerful, who's more beautiful, who's more renowned, who's more famous, who's more knowledgeable, and who has more wealth, you see. We can compare everybody, you see. We can put everybody in there. We can put Vajrakishore Das in there for the comparison.
Huh? We just saw that one. The Bhagavan.
There was a Bhagavan in the out here in the roadway, beggar Bhagavan. So yeah, we can run everyone through it and compare and see all the great personalities in the Vedas: Shiva, Narayan, Indra, Durga. We can put all of them through and see who has more power, who has more beauty, who's more renowned, who's more knowledgeable, who's more wealthy, and who's more famous. And actually, if you do that, you'll see that Krishna defeats everybody in every category. Krishna defeats everyone. Therefore, if we have to choose somebody to be God, then Krishna is the winner. Now, if somebody wants to have an impersonal idea of God, they can do that. They're called Brahmanandis, impersonals. If they choose to have an impersonal idea of God, all right, you can do that. But you won't be able to have a relationship with God. You see? You can't have a relationship with something impersonal. Those who hold on to the impersonal conception, they can be considered a transcendentalist if they're strictly following religious principles. But they cannot have a personal, they can't have the joy and the beauty and the wonder and the excitement of a personal relationship with that Supreme Person. Therefore, Krishna says that of these two paths, the personal and the impersonal path, the personal path is better. What is that? Klesha dikkadatashte sham avyakta sakta cheta sam. What is that? For those who are on this impersonal path, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. So the impersonal path is there for those who just can't accept that God could be a person. They say, oh, it's not possible that God could be a person because he expanded himself as everything. And even if he was a person, he's no longer a person. Because now he's diffused himself into to the total existence. That's what they say. Since God is everything, he couldn't have a form in one place since he's the gigantic form of the whole existence. But they're trying to limit God to their own material conception. God is so unlimitedly potent that he can be in one place with a form at the same time be expanded everywhere as his diffuse energy. I mean, even if the sun can do it, why can't God do it? The sun is in one place with this fiery ball form. Actually, there's, for those who really know, there's a sun god who's there behind the whole thing, Viveshwam. But even for those who don't understand, can't understand the sun god who's actually living there with a fiery body, even if you just think of the sun globe as the sun, the ultimate manifestation of the sun, you can still see the sun globe is expanded throughout the whole existence or the universe by its sun rays, but yet it's still there in one place. So if even the sun can be localized and all expanded simultaneously, why God couldn't? Is the sun greater than God? That doesn't make sense. So just as the sun can be in one place and at the same time be everywhere, God is in one place, enjoying his pastimes with his intimate devotees. At the same time, he's everywhere throughout his expanded energy. Bhumirapo nalo vayu kangmano buddharevacha ahankara ityang me bina prakriti rashtada. He has his expanded energies: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These are the expanded material energies of Krishna. But he's there in his original form, enjoying with his intimate associates. And the beauty of this process of Krishna Bhakti is, it enables you to also become one of the intimate associates of that Supreme Person. All you have to do is revive. Why do we say revive your loving relationship? Because you originally had that loving relationship. Some people say, well, how is it possible that anybody could ever leave the spiritual world in such a perfect place? But look at it from the other angle. Well, here we are. So it must be possible. You say, well, then How is it? Someone says, well, how could it be possible that somebody would ever leave? Well, here we are. We're not there, right? We're in the material right now. Do you think God is so cruel he would create somebody to be suffering in this material existence by their very nature? Do you think God is so cruel he would create somebody who would be a suffering soul in the material existence? Okay, now I will create you as a suffering soul in this material existence. You think God is so mean and nasty? He would create somebody as a suffering soul in this material world? No. That's not logical. It's more logical to understand. Since God is the source of everything, he's the source of all love. Love exists indeed because he is so kind. Therefore, it must be our foolishness that God is here, not that God would put us here. And that's a thing. Well, someone say, well, how can we be foolish? I mean, well, God is supremely independent, and therefore we as his parts and parcels also possess to some degree the quality of independence. If we misuse it, then we find, by trying to imitate him, taking his position, then we find ourselves here in this material existence. So all we have to do is agree to give up this idea of trying to place ourselves as the center of existence. And then we can go back to our original position. We can revive our original loving relationship with the Supreme Person, Krishna. So anyway, it's now 9 o'clock. I can ask if there's any questions. Question?
They serve the prasadam 9 o'clock.
Oh, they're serving prasadam over there now, so there's no time for questions? Well, actually, I see in the temple room the questions sometimes go to 9:15. So if they have any questions, they can ask. I'm sure they'll be prasadam because of it.
I have one question, but yeah, it's not related to this.
Okay.
We have demigods. So can demigods like Shiva be worshipped along with Krishna on the same altar?
So you talk about your home altar?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually not required to worship any of the demigods, because when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished. It's like we have training program for those people who are new, completely new to Vedic culture. And we tell them, well, here's what you put on your altar. You put Prabhupada, Panchatattva, and Radha Krishna, and that's it. We don't tell them, well, you got to put up, you know, there are 33 million demigods, so you better get a really big altar now. And because you can get 33 million photographs to put all the demigods on there too. Why would you want to put one demigod and leave off the other demigods? That's one question. The other demigods might feel offended. You're worshipping other demigods, but not me. Every part of our body is under the control of a demigod, even passing stools under a particular demigod. If you offend that demigod, you might get constipated. So, you know, we don't want to offend any demigods, right? So there's actually 33 million. So if you want to get to that level, we got to please all the different demigods, offer a puja to every demigod. Well, if there's 33 million demigods, let's say you did a 5-minute puja for each demigod. That's 165 million minutes it would take. Now, how many days, how many hours, how many years would it take to do all those pujas? And there's no time to go to the bathroom. There's no time to go out and earn some money. There's no time to sleep or eat. If you did a 5-minute puja for each one of 33 million demigods, it would take you a very long time. And if you made any mistake in any of the pujas, that demigod would be offended. Well, you chanted this mantra wrong, so now I'm going to curse you. You mispronounced my name, and now I'm going to curse you. So, therefore, it's not recommended to do demigod worship. It's recommended if you simply worship Krishna nicely, and even if you mispronounce his name, Krishna takes your sincerity. That's he's not seeing it in a ritualistic way. He's seeing your sincerity. But let's say somebody grew up in a home where Shiva was always on the altar. Can you, or Durga, or Ganesh, or whatever, can you keep them on your altar? Especially your wife may not be a devotee and she may be very disturbed. Something like that, you see. Yeah, you could keep them there, but on a lower level. And it's not that you offer them the bhoga, but you offer the idea is when you offer the bhoga to Krishna, then they get Krishna's prasadam. And that's in that way you could keep a demigod, that, you know, in your family line, so your parents don't become, you know, have a heart attack when they see your altar or something like that. It is possible to make those kind of adjustments according to time, place, and circumstance. But in terms of your spiritual life, you don't need to put Shiva in your altar. Therefore, we don't have Shiva on the altar here. Shiva is the most pleased, actually, when you worship Krishna. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. When you worship Krishna, then, in fact, you know, Shiva appeared as Shankara, and Shankara explained that Krishna was the Supreme. So, there's the answer. Does that fully answer it? Any other questions?
Can we have pictures of Vishnu and Lakshmi in the altar?
Who?
Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi, Ranganatha, then Tirupati Balaji.
I couldn't make out the words.
Vishnu, Lakshmi, Tirupati Balaji and all that pictures, can we keep them on the altar?
It's better not to have a cluttered altar. I mean, you know. I mean, if it's part of your culture and you just can't bear to take them down, it's okay, but not necessary. You know, maybe because your husband.
Husband worships Umdi Venkateshwar.
He does what?
He does worship Umdi Venkateshwar.
He does not worship Balaji.
He worships Umdi Venkateshwar, not any other, even.
Your husband, you can keep Venkatesha on the altar, certainly. Oh yeah, definitely. Because Venkatesha is actually, it is a shortened form of Vaikuntheshwara. He's the Lord of, Venkatesha means the Lord of Vaikuntha. So that is Krishna. So there's no harm. For your husband's sake, yes, keep Venkateshwara on the altar. But if it was just you, I mean, there's no reason, you know. Not necessary. It's like in ISKCON, we don't have all these different on the altar. It's not necessary.
How do we know that we are advancing bhakti?
How do you know if you're advancing?
Bhakti.
If you're seeing Krishna, then you know you're advancing in bhakti. If you're seeing Krishna at every minute, then you know I'm advancing in bhakti. So are you able to see Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna? That's described in the Bhagavad Gita. Yamang pashyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pashyati tashaham na pranashyami satchamena pranashyati. For one who sees me within everything and everything within me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Bhagavad Gita chapter 6, text number 30. So are you seeing Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna? If you are, then you know you're advancing. If you're not, then you have some work to do.
But isn't that they're making some progress, some advancement?
Well, if you're becoming slightly more conscious of Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna, then you are advancing. Yeah.
But during emergency, say when we meet with an accident, we don't remember Krishna. Say after half an hour, we remember some things. When I had a fall last week, I was traveling somewhere, I had a fall, but that time I could not remember Krishna's name.
That means you haven't advanced very much. If you forgot Krishna at an important time, like having an accident. That means you haven't advanced very much. I mean, you know, it could have been death. I mean, you know, you have to be ready, you know. It's like Mataji and I, we were driving back from a preaching in North Texas one time, and a huge blizzard came over Texas. There was snow on the road, there was ice, it was horrible, it was very dangerous. We thought we were almost, it was horrible. You couldn't even, we were on the highway and all the off ramps were snowed in. You couldn't even get off the highway. You had to stay on the highway. You couldn't get off the highway. People who tried to get off the highway, they got stranded. They couldn't move. Luckily, there was a gas station right on the road, so we were able to fill up our tank and keep going. When we came to one spot, we thought we were almost home. We were trying to get back to the... We were lived at the temple. We were trying to get back in time for the Sunday feast. It was like 2 o'clock or something on Sunday afternoon. We thought, oh, we're almost there. We're just 20 miles away. And we took a little side road. We were thinking we'd get away from the traffic jam. It turned out to be a big mistake. It was a little county road, a two-lane county road off of the freeway. And we came on a little stretch, and all of a sudden, the car just went, it was pure ice. And there was a drop-off on both sides. And the car was a 280-degree spinning. In other words, we're driving like this, and the car spins like this. 270-degree spin. And it went flying off the road in the air. And went flying through the air off the road backwards. We were flying off the road in the air backwards. And Mataji and I both remembered Krishna. She was chanting, Hare Krishna, and I was going to Sringaday. Can the Sringaday protect from danger, you know? I think this is a pretty dangerous situation I'm thinking we're in right now. Here we are going flying off the road through the air. And I don't know what's going to happen when we hit, you know. Kawam, you know. It was heavy. We both remembered Krishna, you see. Actually, by Krishna's grace, there was so much snow, it created a pillow. We landed in a pillow of snow, if you can imagine. There wasn't even a scratch on the car. There wasn't, not even, we didn't get bruised. There wasn't, none of the windows were broken. Radhadamadar in the car, too. I mean, nothing was even disturbed. It was amazing. We flew through the air in a pillow of snow. It was amazing. But the point is, we both were yelling out the name of God. You know, you have to be ready. At any, you know, you can have an accident and leave your body within 1 minute. You can be dead and gone. You know, but and if you forgot Krishna, well, you got to take birth again. You weren't ready. You got to be trained up so that when death comes, Krishna. See, when Prabhupada left his body. Here in this room in Vrindavan, he said, Krish. And before he could say na, he was gone. Right in between Krishna, Krish and na, he left. Krish. He departed in between the two syllables. Krish, and before he could say na, he departed. So you have to be trained up. That means you haven't, that means you're still very much a neophyte devotee. You can't remember Krishna or call out his name, you know, when you're being, there's some accident. You better, can you become more serious now about Krishna consciousness?
So how do you become serious?
Become serious by begging Krishna for the mercy. My dear Lord, please bless me that I can become fixed up in Krishna consciousness. You have to beg Krishna very feelingly. Make you his pure devotee. Actually, that begging is our japa. We're begging every day. Krishna, please make me your pure devotee. Hare Krishna. Just beg Krishna very sincerely. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Don't just mechanically. Well, I got to get my rounds done. No. Chant with the mood of begging Krishna for pure bhakti. That will make you serious. By your chanting your japa with feeling, that will make you serious. Okay? Louder, please.
It's past 20 minutes.
All right, so now we can stop. Everyone can take prasadam. Thank you all very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.